Adam Хава Амахе. శ్రీ మహాగణాధిపతయే నమః సదాశివ సమారంభాం శంకరాచార్య నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేత్. ఆత్మస్వరూప బంధుగణ్. సో వి విల్ స్టార్ట్ ది 58th వెర్స్. యు మే సే విత్ మీ, యదా సంహరతే చాయం కూర్మోంగానీవ సర్వశః ఇంద్రియాణి ఇంద్రియార్థేభ్యః తస్య ప్రజ్ఞా ప్రతిష్ఠిత. సో యు సీ, this is the sthita prajna characteristic based on the operation of the sense organs. Indriya upasamhara moolaka sthita prajnata, that is how they call it. So a person gets established in wisdom when he uses his sense organs appropriately, which amounts to saying he stops using the sense organs to a large extent. That is the upasamhara. Appropriately means go on using it. Now you are using in a particular fashion, now you are using in a different fashion, not like that. The best way to use the sense organs is to use them to the minimum. That is the best way. Indriyani indriyarthebhyaha. So, very nice words. Here the indriyani are two kinds of sense organs. One is karmendriyas, organs of action. Two kinds of organs, I mean. So, the other is jnanendriya, sense organs. Both kinds of indriyas, both sets of indriyas are operated by mind. Mind is the ekadasha. In fact, in Bhagavatam, mind is described as the leader of a commando unit consisting of 10 commandos. Ekadasha Bhataha. There are 10 commandos in two groups, 5 plus 5, and the mind is the leader on those 10 commandos. You know, commando is a very highly trained, skillful, powerful person. And now if you allow the commando to do a job, he will do it to the fullest extent. Very powerful person. And so mind holds the power of releasing these 10 commandos into the world. And the mind is the leader. Now in yoga, it is the mind which is addressed. You want to gain a mastery over the mind. Yogaha chattavurti nirodhaha, you know. So if you want to do something with the mind, having recognized that mind is the problem, that recognition must be there first. If you do not recognize that, then you are not a student of yoga. Suppose, this is how I say, suppose you think there is problem, there is suffering, this is universally accepted, and we call it samsara. There is samsara for everybody. It is there for a president of a country and it is there for a poorest person of the country. There is samsara. It is a pervasive thing. But then what could be the cause of it? Suppose you say the cause of my samsara is my family members. Many people think like that. Or my office people, my seniors and my juniors, or my neighbors, or the society in which I live is the cause of my samsara. Many people think like that. And they are very frustrated with their community, with their society. And then, you see, one day I was standing in Hrishikesh on Lakshmana Jhola. There was a Jhola, like our George Washington Bridge here. A similar, smaller version of that is there in Hrishikesh, a Jhola. So when I was standing there, I was talking with one Mahatma. Then a devotee came. The devotee suggested that there is so much dirt and all littering around, all around. Hrishikesh is a very narrow streets, and it is very unfortunate that there is so much littering in this place. So like that he was complaining. This Mahatma told, is that what you have seen in Hrishikesh? You look down, there is Ganga. It is so wonderfully flowing. You look up, there is Akasha, space, and there are these peaks just rising into the sky, marvelous peaks, and the forest on those peaks. And you look at around people with so much religious fervor, the spirituality, that you can see on a mass scale, if you want to see spirituality, a million people worked up spiritually, if you want to see, you can see it only in India. You cannot see elsewhere. So you see this. All this you missed. And you see that littering and sewage canal, only these things you see. So this is how. So people can have problem with the society, with the surroundings, if they can have problems. Of course, many people have problems with the stars and planets. that is there. So if your problems are like that outside, then you are not a student of yoga. You work out on that level. But if you think your problems, they have their locus in the mind, then you have arrived. And now, why the mind could be a problem? How the mind can cause problem to you? It causes problem because it is too much attached and passionate towards the pleasure objects of the world. That is how it causes a problem. Yesterday I was saying that all the fickleness, all the restlessness of the mind arises from a number of desires and fears which we nurse in our mind. That is how it is. So, it is the mind which creates problems for itself by wandering aimlessly, passionately in the world around. It is like a naughty child. He doesn't get good marks in the college, a naughty boy, naughty young man. He doesn't get good marks because he doesn't apply his mind to study. He is intelligent, he's very intelligent, but he doesn't apply the mind to the studies. He doesn't sit and read even for 15 minutes. It is beyond him. So because his mind is always roaming in the streets and he has to run away, his friends are waiting. So if you want to bring some meaning into his life, if you want to make him a better student, first stop him roaming all around. Then reading will come later. Applying the mind to the studies is the second step. The first step is, he should be stopped from roaming all over the place. Then once that stability comes to the mind, because by roaming around all the time from morning to evening, there is no stability in the mind. He cannot sit in a place for any length of time, and therefore he cannot apply his mind to the studies. That is his problem. So what you have to do is, first isolate him from all his friends. Let him somehow make him stop roaming. And then a modicum of stability will come into his life. Then put books before him and he will start reading. Then mind starts applying. He will get good marks in the college. Our mind is like that. So, mind has two problems, twofold problem. Number one is impurities of the mind. That is, intense likes and dislikes, ragadvesha, they are the impurities. Everything else arises from ragadvesha only. We have intense likes and dislikes, anger, envy, jealousy, frustration, dejection, despondency, all these things will come from them. So, ragadvesha or the malinyam, we call it impurity of the mind. That is one problem with the mind. The second problem is, probably these points we will further discuss later. The second problem of the mind is, it is unstable. There is nothing wrong with, your ideas may be right, you may be living a very simple life, you do not have many desires. That means the mind is relatively pure, but still it is very unstable. ఆల్వేజ్ ఆన్ ది మూవ్, హైపర్ యాక్టివ్. దట్ ఈస్ వాట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ చంచలత. సో మాలిన్యం, ఇంప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్. టూ, ఎన్ అన్స్టేబుల్ నేచర్ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్. ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ ది క్వశ్చన్ ఆఫ్ ప్యూరిటీ ఆర్ ఇంప్యూరిటీ, ఇట్ ఈస్ జస్ట్ అన్స్టేబుల్, ఆల్వేస్ గివెన్ టు మూవ్మెంట్ డ్యూ టు దట్ రజోగుణ, హైపర్ యాక్టివ్. దట్ ఈస్ ఎ సెకండ్ ప్రాబ్లం. సో వీ హ్యావ్ టు అడ్రస్ దీస్ టూ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్. అండ్ విత్ రిఫరెన్స్ టు ది సెకండ్ ప్రాబ్లం, నెమ్లీ ది హైపర్ యాక్టివిటీ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్, యూ నీడ్ టు కల్టివేట్ ది అపోజిట్. యూ హ్యావ్ టు ట్రైన్ ది మైండ్ టు బి స్టేబుల్. వీ కాల్ ఇట్ స్థైర్యం, స్టెబిలిటీ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్. యు సీ, దిస్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో కాల్డ్ ఫోకసింగ్ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్. దట్ స్టెబిలిటీ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్ షుడ్ బి దేర్. మైండ్ ఈజ్ ఆల్వేజ్ ఆన్ ది రన్. ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఆల్వేజ్ ఇన్ ఎ హరీ. As I tell you, while taking a bath, you think of breakfast. While taking breakfast, you think of traffic. And while in the traffic, you think of the... So like that, mind is always on the run. What next? What next? It is a syndrome-like thing for the mind. It gets... takes for granted the present immediately. And it is always looking for the future. It is one step ahead of the body. Body cannot keep pace with the mind. So mind is running and body is dragging itself behind the mind. This kind of hyperactivity of the mind is a disease. It is nothing short of a disease. And one should have the opposite of that, namely sthairyam, stability. So if the mind is stable, then the life will be stable also. A stability will come into life. You see, even in the management philosophy, suppose you interview a person. He came for an interview for a job in your company. Then while interviewing, you ask him, where you did you work earlier? I worked in a company. How long? I worked for 2 years there. Oh, 2 years. Now you want to change the job. Before that, where you worked? I worked in another company. How long? 1.5 years. So like this, some people keep changing the jobs every 1 year, 2 years. And such a person is not preferred by the management people. You know why? Because they could see a lack of stability in the person. So this way, stability becomes a very important input for any growth of the person, whether it is the worldly growth or the spiritual. So that stability, which we call sthairyam in Sanskrit, it is presented as an important value by Sri Krishna. He says in another place, sthairyam atma vinigraha. Sthairyam is a stability which comes by atma vinigraha. Atma is the mind moving away into the world through the sense organs. That is the atma, not Sachidananda atma. So that atma vinigraha, so the body, the sense organs are held in check. That is the atma vinigraha. And that atma vinigraha leads to sthairyam, stability. So this sthairyam is the stability of the personality, which is the same as the stability of the mind, is presented here. So a sthitaprajna, a wise man, has a very stable mind. That sthairyam is there with him. We say this sthairyam is also called the adhara shakti. These are some of the terminology. Adhara shakti means it is the strength of the foundation. That is what it is. Suppose you build a skyscraper. So skyscraper technology is a very simple thing, really. If you talk with structural engineers, they tell building one story after the other is not a big deal. That can be done easily. First you decide how many stories you have to build, 50 or 75 or 100. And then tell us. They say they can build 500 stories theoretically. In theory, they have designed buildings on paper of 500 stories. They can do it because they say raising the height is not an issue for them. Their problem is foundation. Foundation is the thing. Even in World Trade Center, recently I was seeing a documentary. In that attack, the building has collapsed and it has spoiled some of the structures in the foundation. And that's why the Hudson River started leaking into that ground. So they have a lot of study to do about the foundation. If the foundation is right, then buildings 50 stories or 75 stories, it's only a matter of details. They can do it. Whichever way you want, they can do it. It's only a matter of putting an extra girders and go on building story after story. So foundation must be strong. Similarly, for a personality, that adhara shakti, the foundation must be strong. The person must have a stability of the mind. So here in this verse, we have an avatara, in dashavataras, 10 incarnations of the Lord. So there is a korma avatara that is brought in here. You see, that avatara is an interesting story. So there is this ocean which has to be churned. For churning the ocean, you need a churning rod, which is the mountain. For churning the ocean, a mountain peak only can be the churning rod. We need a very big one, you know. So the mountain, it is there. Ocean is there. The mountain is there for churning. And for churning the rod, for moving the rod, you need a rope that is also available. But then what is missing is the base on which this mountain peak can be held and churned. That adhara shakti is missing. And that is provided by the Lord by coming as an incarnation of korma. Korma is tortoise. So Bhagavan has appeared as a tortoise, and when they saw this huge tortoise, this is the story, when they saw this huge tortoise floating on the, floating, going down and again floating on the waters of the ocean, then the idea, bright idea comes to the devata, gods. God means angels. Angels or whatever. So some supernatural beings. So that idea comes to them. They want to use this tortoise as the base. So they keep this mountain peak on the back of the tortoise, and that holds the mountain peak steady, and now they do the churning. While they do that churning, first emerges poison. Most virulent poison comes out. And now, nobody, even among these gods, nobody can handle that poison. Therefore, they surrender that poison to Lord Shiva. That's the Lord Dakshinamurti. They just surrender the poison to him. He can handle it. We cannot handle it. And then they continue with this churning. Then comes the nectar. Manna emerges. That is the story. That story is kept in mind when saying this verse. Yada samharate chayam kurmongani vasarvashaha. So what you have to do is, for meditation or for the practice of yoga, you need the stability of the mind. That is the korma. And once you have a stable mind, then mind with all its thoughts is the ocean. And you practice abhyasa is the churning rod. Yes, I am giving you the symbology of that story. Abhyasa is the churning rod. Practice morning and evening. Morning and evening, that is practice you do. That is the churning rod. And to continue with the practice, you need stability of the mind. You know, it is like people start going to the gym. They find that they are putting up a little extra weight. So, putting on some extra weight, and so they get worried, and so they start going to gym. And first 2 days, 3 days, very regularly they go. Then slowly they start skipping. And after 10 days, the gym has gone into history. Now he cannot go to gym anymore because he is busy otherwise. This is how it happens. Yoga also same thing. They start yoga practice very seriously, and they do for 3 days or 5 days, and then some urgent work comes and they skip it. Then the skipping becomes the routine, and doing goes into background, and therefore slowly he will say, I too used to do yoga. That is how he ends up. This is what is called a lack of stability. Therefore, without stability, you cannot move the churning rod. So that stability of the mind, that commitment, then also called a nishtha. And if you have to make some lifestyle changes for acquiring that stability, then you should do it. If you have to dump a few things, unnecessary things, to gain more leisure within, that inner leisure, to gain it, if you have to stop a few things, then stop them and stay with the practice, yoga abhyasa, then only it means something. So, that stability must be there. Then the churning should be done with practice of meditation. Meditation can be a very frustrating effort. We don't leave it so easily. You have to stay with meditation. Even if this idea, oh, it is not working, the meditation is not working, it may be haunting you for a length of time, still you stay with the meditation. Don't give it up. You stay with it for 1 year, for 5 years, for 10 years also you stay with it. Even if it appears that it is not paying dividends, still you stay with it. Then, first comes the virulent poison, namely the unconscious starts manifesting. It is coming out only to leave you. It is, they call it kashaya, etc. Sa kashayam vijaniyat. So, when you recognize, that means you become very frustrated. You become very self-pitying that my life had been a waste, this and that. So, that kind of the poison and also all kinds of the grievances that we have with our parents, etc. So, all that will come out. That is the poison. It comes first. But you continue the churning. You should not stop the churning at that level. Then you won't get the nectar. You continue to practice. This practice of meditation, yoga, is the churning, really. You do it continuously, and then you will discover a joy for no reason. You don't need a particular condition to be fulfilled to be happy. You will be happy spontaneously, naturally. That spontaneous happiness is your inner nature, and you will discover it. That is the amrutam. So this is the churning of ocean of the mind. And this can be done, this becomes possible only if you have that stability, that korma, you need it. That is the significance of korma avatara. So kurmonganiva sarvashaha. This korma, tortoise, has a very interesting attitude, and also its body structure is very interesting. When it is moving, its four legs are extended, and its head is extended, and the tail is extended, total six. And all the six are extended, and it is moving. Now, if it faces a threat, then suddenly it withdraws all the six. So, like kurmaha anganiva. Similarly, you have to withdraw from the world in sixfold way. That is the drishtanta, that is the illustration. So, like even a tortoise withdraws the six limbs into itself, similarly, you withdraw the six. What are those six? Five sense organs and the mind. They are the six. In fact, in Yoga Shastra, in Yoga Darshanam, there is one anga. Among the eight limbs of yoga, we have what is called pratyahara. And if you see the pratyahara definition of Patanjali, he brings in these 5 + 1 = 6. So, when you withdraw the five sense organs, automatically the mind is also withdrawn. And these sense organs, what happens to them? They go and resolve in the mind. So, when the kurma, when the tortoise withdraws its limbs, they are withdrawn into itself. Similarly, it is the mind which goes into the world through eyesight. It is not that you see things with the eyes, that looks like that, but really it is the mind alone which is seeing the things through eyes. It is like you are peeping onto the road through a window. Now who is looking at the road? Is the window looking at the road, or you are looking at the road? You are looking at the road, not the window. But it seems as though the window is facing the road, and hence window is staring at the road. That is not the truth. Similarly, when the eyes are looking at the world, it is the mind which is looking at the world. And the person, the me, is nothing more than the mind. Therefore, when I say the mind is looking at the world, it amounts to saying the small self is looking at the world. And then it is the mind which listens to the sounds through the ears. It is the mind which recognizes or perceives the fragrance or the foul smell through nose. It is not the nose which perceives, it is the mind which perceives. Again, it is the mind which is described as pervading the entire body, which recognizes the sense of touch through the organ of sense of touch. So it is again the mind which enjoys the taste through taste buds, which is the organ. Therefore, it is the mind which runs away like a spoilt young person. I said young person because of the activity of the mind. That is the comparison. So, it is the mind which runs away into the world in a very passionate way through these five windows. And now, you can do it in two ways. One is, I decide not to go into the street. Then I need not close the doors. I take a decision not to go, that's all. The doors are open or closed, it doesn't matter. But suppose I take a decision, but I don't have self-confidence. Then what to do? Go and close the doors. It is like that. So, it is like, I don't want to take sweets. Therefore, even if you put a basket of sweets there, I'm not going to be tempted. But if the sweets are there, I will be tempted, but I don't want to take them. Then you keep these sweets away, so that we cannot reach them. So, you follow both techniques depending upon the need. That's why, because we do not have yet the mastery over the mind, and we allow it to run away, then start closing the windows, through which it is just running away. Indriyani, indriyarthebhyaha. So, that's why if you want to do meditation, suppose you sit like this looking around, can you do meditation? No, because in meditation you want to focus the mind on a given thing, the dhyayam what we call, but then mind is running away into the world through the eyesight. Therefore we say, close the eyes. This is called pratyahara. Like a kurma, the tortoise starts withdrawing, so you close the eyes. Then still you will be listening to the sounds. In the house they do meditation. So, they close the eyes but they will be noticing what is going on around. Because they will be listening to. So, newspaper comes with a thud. So, he recognizes newspaper has come. Okay, let me finish meditation so that I can see the headlines at least. So, this is how the mind tries to run away from the other organ, namely hearing. So, you stop listening to, means stop paying attention to the sounds that are going on around. Like that, you withdraw the sense organs. This is when you sit in for meditation. But it is always like this, that 15 minutes or 10 minutes period of meditation, that's a discipline in the morning and in the evening, that works effectively only when you have a contemplative nature and a prayerful lifestyle throughout the waking state. Therefore, if you indulge in the sense pleasures during the daytime, morning, afternoon and evening, and then want to do some yoga at an appointed time again, morning or evening, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You see, one gentleman told me, he has the practice of doing Shirshasana every day. He was telling me. Just casually he mentioned to me, I did not ask. So I was saying, oh, that is very nice. I appreciate that being a very executive and all that, big executive and all that, you hold on to Shirshasana, you do it regularly, I am very happy. Then within another 5 minutes he was telling certain things and he says, every day he enjoys a beer. That is what he told. Then I told him, you stop doing Shirshasana. It may not be good for you. Stop doing it. Because you indulge yourself in such unnecessary sense pleasures and at the same time you want to do yogasana, they may not be compatible. There may be some problems with it. You discuss it with a yoga therapist or whatever. I have a feeling that you are doing mistake. Then he asked me, what shall I do? You stop taking all kinds of intoxicating substances, what we call drugs. Alcohol is also a drug. So you stop consuming all of them. Then you are eligible to pursue yoga. You cannot do both things. There is no compatibility between the two. So, if you want to pursue yoga, you should put an end to all kinds of indulgence. Indriyan indriyarthebhya. So, you just don't go into the world. I won't say necessarily or unnecessarily. I say just withdraw from the world. You are all students of yoga. You are not students of worldliness. Indriyan indriyarthebhya upasamharate. He withdraws. You see, for living, that is the ultimate goal, I tell you. For living, what all you need is two square meals. That is what a human being needs. As per the creation, I need two square meals. Even breakfast is added later. It is an addition only. Okay, you say that. You accommodate it. Two square meals and a breakfast. You can, so, and you need clothing to protect the body from elements. And you need a shelter for the same reason. That is all you need. Anything other than that is our own fancy. So the Shruti or the Shastra talks from that standpoint. You don't need to indulge in all kinds of things. And so you want to, when I say you, I don't mean you sitting here. In a general way, that is a style of talking. So we need not to indulge in all kinds of things. And while doing so, there is no fun of practicing yoga. What yoga we practice? It just doesn't work. It is always a back and forth affair. So, you close the windows, pratyahara. So, you don't need to eat beyond a point. You don't need to indulge in all kinds of luxuries. No need. You see, we accumulate these possessions, you know. We think that these possessions remain in their places. A car remains in the garage and other things remain in their respective places. You think like that. It is never like that. While accumulating the possessions, you are accumulating a corresponding desire and fear structure in the mind. That is how the desire and fear structure develops. So, if you live in a simple lifestyle, if you live a simple lifestyle, then automatically yoga practice becomes that much more comfortable and you will make rapid progress. You lead a very luxurious, indulgent lifestyle, then yoga practice is at the best a back and forth affair. It never fructifies. It never crosses that threshold. There is always a threshold for everything. So, it doesn't cross that threshold. It remains at the initial level. So, yada samharate chayam kurmonganiva. You see, this kurma has got a very interesting attitude in withdrawing. The attitude is, suppose a tortoise is crawling forward. It makes a steady progress. It just doesn't run. It is a very good example. A tortoise is very purposeful, very focused, and slow and steady. That is how yogi functions. That is because the tortoise has got that adhara shakti. It stands for adhara shakti, the stability. That is the illustration. Therefore, when the tortoise is making progress, suppose some threat is presented before it, then it won't run away. You notice a tortoise, it won't run away. It's not like a cat. A cat is making a few steps and then some threat comes in, it turns back and runs away. It's not like that. A tortoise won't run away. It stands. Also, some animals, when threatened, they attack you. A tortoise won't attack you. It won't run away. So, that's why we select a tortoise as an illustration. Very stable guy it is. So, you are not afraid of the world. For that reason you are not, I am not saying you withdraw from the world. Because you are afraid of the world. That is not the idea. At the same time, you are not hateful of the world too. That is not the idea also. But then you remain as a tortoise, stable and withdrawn because you love doing it. Not out of you do not have a particular raga towards the world, nor you have a dvesha towards the world. It is not a passion for the world. It is not a hate for the world. It is not that kind of a thing. Some of the religious theology, a theologian or a religious person, out of a fervor, he tries to develop a distaste for the world. Because he considers, he takes it, that a distaste for the world is necessary to make progress in his devotion. That is how they look at it. As a discipline, I don't have anything against it. Because whether it is distaste or anything, you stop indulgence, that is the best thing to do, in any case. But that is not the ideal way of dealing with the things. The ideal way is, we neither hate nor get engrossed in the affairs of the world, in the luxuries or the pleasures of the world. We maintain an objectivity towards them, and based on a proper understanding, and a withdrawal based on understanding. So, we will discuss what is that understanding, etc. will come. In all probability, in the next verse it will come. So, we withdraw like a tortoise. Stable and steady, neither attacking nor running away. So, that is the kurmongāniva sarvashaha. That's why that kurma illustration, I love that illustration. It brings to mind an entire story of the kurmavatara, which is a highly symbolic story. And also it presents a very nice attitude towards the world. Neither you attack the world, nor you run away from the world. Let the world remain in its place. I am stable within myself. So, atmanyevatmana tushtaha, that idea is very nicely brought out in the tortoise example. So, the withdrawal. Then sarvashaha. The sarvashaha is an important verse. You see, when you want to withdraw from the sense pleasures, you don't do them, you don't do it step by step. You don't do it. They call it cold turkey method. Either all or nothing. You don't do it step by step. Like for I can give an example. You see how well you can relate to that example. You see, I had a friend. So, one day the friend asked me, let us go to the club. You know, club means it's not the regular club, etc. What I mean by club, a place where sense pleasures are pursued. I refer to such a place as a club. It could be any place you know. So, he said, let us go to the club. I said, we don't need club. What for? I don't hate a club or any such thing, but I don't need it. Then I told him, just I am giving you a hypothetical story, how to illustrate the idea sarvashaha. So I asked him, what is the matter? What for you need to go to club? It is not a good place really for a seeker like you. He said, no, I am not interested in all the things that go on in the club. I am interested in only reading a newspaper. It is like only one small area I want to go there. I say sarvashaha, you just leave it alone totally. No, I am not interested in all the things that are there. Only a small part of it I will enjoy. What is that newspaper? I told you, purchase a newspaper at home and read it. Oh, I do it already. Then why you are going there? At home there is only one newspaper, there are five newspapers. You see, this newspaper reading habit is one thing, this is one window for the mind. You read newspaper and then become frustrated and dejected. That is what happens by reading a newspaper. What is there in it? Suppose you miss reading newspaper for a month and then read it, you will find it exactly almost similar to the situation when you left it. Nothing new comes out of it. Details may vary, but the essence will be the same. So that's why this is, everybody is tempted to do that. They read one paper and then they read the other paper and then they read the third paper. That is the temptation. So he cannot purchase all of them at home. Whereas in the club, they are all there. So reading room is there in club. So he went there. Then when he was reading newspaper for a while, they are playing cards in the next room. And there is a window between the two rooms. So one of the friends called him, "You come and read here. Why you read there? You bring that newspaper here." They offered a seat to him. And so he was sitting by their side and reading newspaper. Now while reading newspaper, occasionally he was looking at the play of cards, what is going on. He is watching this play of cards. So like they play blackjack, you go and stand there and watch what is going on. Then after a while, you feel like seeing what it is. So take $100 and give it to him and start see what goes on. So like that, he was slowly adopted into, he was totally absorbed into the playing cards. He now started playing cards. So newspaper entered into playing cards. Then while playing cards for a stake, nobody plays cards for fun. They play for a stake. The fun is already gone. It is only the greed that rules the proceedings. Now, they serve drinks while playing cards. I told him, already from newspaper level you went to the second level, the third level is waiting. No, I won't do all that. So, but soon, within 15 days, first initially he was not taking any drinks, only others were taking. But slowly, when he lost count after count, a drink can boost the morale. Therefore, he entered into the drinks. Then a fourth one will come. You know what is the fourth one. So, one more will come. So this way, you cannot withdraw piecemeal. Either you say no to the whole of it, lock, stock and barrel, say no, or you are dragged into it totally. Sarvashaha. Step by step, there is no step by step. You cannot enter into yoga step by step, away from the world. Therefore, sarvashaha. You stop indulgence with reference to eyesight, with reference to ears, with reference to nose, with reference to taste buds and with reference to the body, the sense of touch. So this way, all the sense organs are withdrawn. When the sense organs are withdrawn, then the organs of action will automatically be withdrawn. They will engage themselves in more purposeful activity than running behind the sense pursuits, which is a very debasing thing. Therefore, sarvashaha. That's why I say cold turkey method. Just dump everything. Put a full stop to everything. Bas. Stay with yourself. Stay with your meditation. Simple lifestyle. The purpose is to reach the ultimate goal of moksha. So that way you have to pursue. Indriyani indriyarthebhyaha. In this verse, sthitaprajna is described. So, while presenting the glory of a sthitaprajna, we describe the sthitaprajna as the one for whom there is no indulgence in the pleasures of the world. Because he has withdrawn the sense organs and the mind wholesale into himself. Because, you see, there is a vasana. Why we indulge? Why we go out into the world and indulge? Because there is a vasana. Vasana means an impression, a deep-rooted impression, a predilection or something they call it. So, it is a tendency, an orientation of the mind. It wants to indulge. We see this all the time with reference to eating. This is snacks and other things. Really, you are not hungry. You are not hungry really. You don't need that food. But still, by vasana, you pick up something. By orientation, by habit, you pick up something. And you munch something. The people, they keep the jaws moving, rolling, though they don't need anything to eat. There is a thing called bubble gum. So, this bubble gum I remembered because I was in Hrishikesh, I was with a yoga teacher. Many yogis are there in Hrishikesh. So I went to a yogashram and I was sitting there. One yogi teacher, one Mahatma is there. He is teaching yoga. And one of the students came with a bubble gum. He was just munching the bubble gum like these cricketers while batting, they go on munching a bubble gum. So like that, he was sitting in Padmasana, Adarasana, Adarasana, bubble gum is going. Then I did not notice it. This Mahatma saw it and told him, a person who munches something in the mouth from morning to evening is not fit for yoga. You please do, either you stay without bubble gum or you leave this place. That is what he told him. Then that man, he just rejected the bubble gum and he continued. Then I asked him later, what is the problem in munching the bubble gum and what is the connection between yoga and this? Then he became so angry with me for asking such a question. And he told me, when a particular sense organ it is a double organ. Because it is the taste is there, taste buds are there, therefore it is a sense organ. And as the jaws and the speech it is karmendriya. Both karmendriya is here and jnanendriya is also here. So this double organ it is, you keep it moving and you keep it in action and you want to do yoga? Wow, did you not hear the verse, yada samharate chayam? So that is what he told. So this way, just munching for no reason whatsoever, it is a very bad orientation of the mind. You need not munch anything. Just keep your mouth shut. You need not munch something. You see, after lunch is over, you take some supari and go on munching it. It is the mind which is playing the trick. Don't think that it is, of course, a harmless thing. I don't have anything against it. But it is the mind which wants to continue with this indulgence, something more, a pawn. Just continue with the indulgence. Desert is the most dangerous thing of that kind only. You are already through with your lunch and now desert comes. This desert is the worst thing. You don't need it. But then the mind wants to continue with that indulgence. So, this kind of activity of the sense organs is bad, it is absolutely bad, and that happens because of the vasana. That is what I wanted to say. It is the vasana that is there in the mind which takes us into the world headlong like that. And for a Mahatma, for a sthita prajna, there is no vasana in him. Nirvasana. All vasanas are destroyed by atmajnanam. We will come to that in the next verse. So, nirvasana molaka sthita prajna it is. No vasanas. So he need not withdraw. He is like a tortoise which has withdrawn already. Whereas, for the sake of a seeker, there is vasana. A seeker, he is not at a sthita prajna. You know, it has a meaning only for the seeker. It has no meaning for a sthita prajna. A sthita prajna need not be told that you are such and such a person. The whole teaching has a meaning for a asthita prajna. Because he has to strive for that stage. Therefore, nirvasana molaka sthita prajnata is the natural thing for the Mahatma, for the realized person. Whereas for a seeker, the vasana molaka pravurti is there. Means the activity of the sense organs, or engaging the sense organs in the sense pursuits of the world is there because of the predilections of the mind, the vasanas of the mind. And so, how to overcome these vasanas? Just, you see, a vasana becomes powerful. A consuming thing it becomes only when you allow it to operate. It acquires strength. Every time you allow it to have its way, it acquires strength. A weakness is there in me. Vasana is a kind of weakness only. So a weakness is there in me. I allow that weakness to have its say. I will not say, oh come on, shut up, keep it away. Like that I won't say it. I am kind towards my own weakness and so I allow it to have its say. I allow the weakness to operate. Then the weakness becomes very strong. So I heard one gentleman saying, I have a weakness for alcohol. And that weakness for alcohol is a very strong weakness, it is. So that is the vasana. And so it is the vasanas that are there in the mind which are expressing through the sense organs. And every time you allow them to manifest, they become stronger and stronger. So the only way to overcome the vasana, the habit of the mind, is to put an end to it wholesale, sarvashaha. This method, which I have described here, is adopted in some of the Alcoholic Anonymous associations and also in the drug rehabilitation centers. They adopt this method in certain cases. They put an abrupt end to the intoxication and then allow the person that way to come out of it. It requires a lot of strength on the part of the person, stability and willpower on the part of the person, and also support systems are needed. He can come out very successfully. It will not fail. He will succeed. And once he comes out, he will not go back. Whereas this is stepwise mechanism. Slowly, first, suppose a nicotine addiction is there. First, you put some patches, some tablets, this and that. And then like that, slowly, stepwise, you reduce it. It never works. Very rarely it works. It's a back and forth only. Very frustrating effort. Therefore, the kurmonganeva sarvashaha, that is in the psychology which is presented here, it looks a little ruthless, but then it works. And so for a seeker, so vasana nirmulana, that is the thing which is, the total elimination of predilections of the mind is what is suggested in this verse. So yada samharate chayam, kurmonganeva sarvashaha, indriyani indriyarthebhyaha, tasya prajna pratishthita. Then comes the next verse. You see, for a jnani, there is a total cessation or total withdrawal of the sense organs because of the nirvasana, because there are no vasanas. For a sadhaka, there are vasanas, but by the strength of contemplation or meditation, he tries to overcome the vasanas. That is a sadhaka, the second level. But there is a third level, an ajnani, an ignorant person, a pamara, or a vishayi, means a person given to indulgence, given to sense pursuits. For a person given to that, how he has to start? Because he is not able to meditate, and he is not a sthitaprajna. How to start? He has to start by forcibly putting an end to indulgence. It is like a person is, just an illustration, a person is overweight and yet he doesn't stop eating because he doesn't have the willpower. Then what you have to do? You have to keep all food away from him and keep him locked in a place where he cannot have any food around. That is what you have to do. This is what is, this is the spirit of certain religious vows. We have a religious vow in India. It is Ayyappa Vratam. So for 40 days, they eat very restricted kind of food. All types of items they won't eat. The items that can be eaten are listed, 3 or 4 of them. They have to eat that only. They have to sleep on a hard floor. And they have to take bath thrice in a day. And they have to keep fast for half the day and for only the other half of the day, only one time they can eat. And they have to wear a particular dress. They should not shave. They have to grow the hair. And they should not smoke, drink, none of these things. This is a vow for 40 days. Now, after 40 days, now you tell me whether this vow is good or bad. It is of course good. It is of course desirable. But after 40 days, what happens? The 41st day, the vow concludes with an offering to the Lord. They go to the temple And they carry these items of the offering on the head as a mark of respect to Lord. And then they give an offering and perform a puja or a ritual. And then you have to see their faces. They are joyous. You know, they have fulfilled a 40 days vow successfully. They are self-satisfied. And now they are returning. While returning, there is no vow. Vow is over. Now you have to see the person. There are restaurants and bars and cafes all open for these returning guys. While going, he won't spend 1 rupee also. He is not a customer. You need not look at him while going up. He is not going to indulge in anything. You can't do any business with him. Whereas in the returning direction, he is a very potential customer. So what happened to him? These vows, what happened to him? These vows, did they work or not? What happened is, the vasana remained intact in his mind. Only an imposed will has kept the sense pleasures away for a limited time. And it is like the gas held in a cylinder under pressure. So once the sodas are there, you know, once you open the cork, it comes out with all its vigor. So similarly, this fellow, while returning at the end of the vow, is a potential customer. He enters, the first thing he does is he enters into the cafe and starts eating as if he has never eaten in life, and then further things and further things. So what happened is, he has undergone a vow with a lot of willpower, with a lot of artificially brought in force he has done, but that vasana remained intact. So, this upasamhara has this kind of an aspect associated with it. He is also like a tortoise, withdrawn everything. But somehow it did not work in his case. Why? Because the vasana was intact. This aspect is brought out in the next verse. We'll come back. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.